the GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First 5 GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Pim Dahan, who is a GP who's got an extended role in minor ops. So over to you, Pim. Thanks very much for joining us. Can you describe for us what your role involves?
I'm a GP based in Birmingham. My extended role is in minor surgery. So I'm an 8-session partner. One of those sessions most weeks is to do minor operation.
Cool. So that sounds like a nice balance. It sounds like you're working pretty hard. Tell us a bit about the minor ops bit of your job then. What do you do in that?
We tend to do minimally invasive procedures. So removing kind of irritating growths such as skin tags, warts, moles and cysts. Or if there's a lesion that might be, you know, we're not sure what it is, but we're pretty sure it's not a cancer, we might remove that to find out what's kind of going on.
You sort of mentioned there that one of your sessions a week is sort of devoted to minor ops. Is most of the session taken up with doing the actual procedures, or is there any sort of other bits and pieces that need doing around setting up the sort of surgical list?
Most of the time is actually spent doing the procedure itself. But, you know, we spend a lot of time getting the room ready. We have to make sure it's clean in between patients. We're making notes of what we've actually done, because we do have to audit our work as we go along as well. I might be contacting patients with results from previous minor surgeries too. But most of the time is spent actually with the patient, consenting them, and then doing the procedure itself.
And how did you get into it, Pim? How did you come to be a GP with an extended role in minor ops?
I always think that this role actually chose me. I was thinking about this, how I actually got into it. And certainly, you know, during my medical training at university, and, you know, I was pretty sure I was going to be a GP, which is great, because it just meant I can get, you know, the most out of the placements that I did. But then during my GP placements, I was lucky enough to do dermatology at City Hospital in Birmingham. And part of that included being trained to do minor ops. So we were taking biopsies and removing, you know, irritating but minor things like the skin tags and the cysts. And I loved it. I didn't think I would. I was quite scared to begin with, but I really enjoyed it. When I was ST2, we did six months in general practice. And I was lucky to have Friday afternoons off. And that also kind of was at the same time that my trainer would do the minor ops. So I made a deal with them, because at this time I'd already completed my AKT. I was quite far off from doing my CSA at that point, that I would actually do the procedures with their supervision, just to kind of keep my skills up. And then my ST3 placement, you know, there wasn't so much of an opportunity to do any sort of minor op. But I decided to use my study budget to actually do the RCTP minor surgery course. So I had that ability then to add that to my CV when I was then looking for jobs, and that led on to my partnership. And I think that was a bit of a draw when I joined my practice, where I'm still at now. I really enjoy it. It's a really great part of my week, to be honest.
And you spoke there that you were sort of lucky to be in a job that was sort of training you on the job to do some procedures. Did you feel that had you not had that, there were any specific requirements that you'd need to start doing some minor ops in practice?
Certainly, if you want to get into minor surgery, you do need to do an accredited course. So either run by the RCGP, or you can find courses through the Association of Primary Care Surgeons, and they will run accredited courses so that you're able to then carry out procedures within practice. It is something that you do need to do regularly. So I would encourage people that do start to do minor surgery to do a course, to maybe sit in with someone else that does the course as well, so they can watch you doing the actual procedure itself, and then audit what you do, are there any sort of complications afterwards, any infections or anything like that? are your diagnoses correct and whatnot? And, and that's a big thing. I recently did an audit of the things that I removed, and to be honest, I'm probably already getting 70% of my differentials correct, and that's absolutely fine, as long as we're not removing accidentally any sort of cancers or anything like that. So you have to kind of act within your limits, if you like.
It's really helpful there to hear that there's some sort of accredited courses that people can go on. In terms of sort of relevant experience that people could start doing it with, you'd obviously done that job where you'd done it on the job. Is there relevant experience that would be useful for people to get before they started sort of offering their services to practices to do minor operations?
The truth is you don't, to be honest. Like anybody, you know, you don't have to have a surgical background. I certainly didn't. And I went straight in after my House of Jobs and my F2 job into GP training. So you don't need to have a surgical background, but if you've got an interest in it, I would definitely, you know, sit in with people that do a minor surgery list. So that's a really good time of your educational time or your personal study time. And they may, you know, do them with you as well. You know, you want to make sure you've got an interest in it and that you're going to enjoy it. And then the next step would be to do an accredited course. We've got a doctor at our practice that was quite interested in doing it. One of our partners that recently joined. So they've kind of sat in with us to make sure that they would enjoy it initially. And they've then gone on to do the actual course itself. And the plan is now for them to sit in with us and actually do some of the procedures with us so that, you know, they're going to be confident when they're on their own that they're going to be able to do the actual procedures.
Just thinking about that accredited course, is there an exam element to it, just so people are aware if they're thinking about signing up for that, or is it mainly the course and then getting the relevant experience on the job?
So when I did my accredited course, there was a small assessment at the end, but I've heard of other people that there isn't one in the course of that daily. So it all depends on which one you go to, and they might use things like pig skin and put like a paintball pellet underneath, and you've got to try and get it out whole. They do admit that most cysts will probably rupture when you're operating on them, and mine certainly do. They may assess your sutures, for example. So there might be a kind of a glance over or a look over what you're doing, just to make sure you know you're going down the right lines. But I think once you've done that course, I wouldn't just suddenly go and start doing it on your own. I would maybe sit in or assist someone doing it so that they can watch you as well doing the actual procedure to make sure you're comfortable.
That's great advice there, to sort of build up your portfolio of the accreditation, but also the experience as well. Do you know of any sort of funding or bursaries if people are sat there listening, thinking, oh yeah, this really sounds up my street, but an accredited course sounds like it might be quite expensive? Any thoughts on funding or bursaries that might be available for people to support that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a GP trainee, you know, if you do an RCGP accredited course, that should be funded. Certainly the trainees in our area have had that funded as part of their study budget. I think if you're in practice already as a salary doctor or a partner, I think it's about going to your actual practice to say, you know, I think minor surgery might be a good thing if you don't already do it. And to kind of say, you know, doing these sorts of procedures is a positive thing for the patients, but also the practice, because it brings in funding. And the funding you get back will far surpass. And the benefit to the patients will far surpass the cost of the actual course itself. So you may need to put your case across to where you worked in order to get the funding.
Great, that's really helpful to get people to start thinking about what their funding opportunities are before sort of embarking on this. And what do you think for you are the sort of main benefits of your role in minor surgery alongside your normal GP role?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love doing it. I genuinely do. And I think, you know, it's very different to what I do in my normal GP clinic. And I'll be honest with you, my GP clinic now is the easiest part of my day. It's a bit that happened in between that kind of I dread and stuff, all the things I've got to catch up on and stuff. And I love seeing patients. But, you know, when you're sat in front of your computer, you're sat down for a couple of hours, you know, you're seeing the patients, you can see your Duckman kind of increasing the number of your tasks, your result. But when you do minor surgery, you're just one-to-one with a patient, not in front of a computer screen. You're stood up. You know, you might have the radio on in the background quietly, you know, and you get to have a nice chat with people, really. They tell you about themselves. They ask you questions as well. So, you know, it's actually quite a nice experience. And certainly it's not a 10-minute consultation. We recently increased our time from minor surgery to 30 minutes because we're doing a lot more complicated things. And, you know, I love it. I suppose from a practice perspective, you know, we're doing procedures that do bring in funding to the actual practice. And it's, you know, very cost effective. If a patient had to go to the hospital to have this procedure, they'd be waiting a really long time and also would cost a lot more. And I always find that patients do really appreciate it, to be honest. They're always very thankful about coming in and having something done, something removed that's really irritated them or they've been worried about for a little while. And as I said, it's great. It's great fun. You know, doing something practical is always worthwhile, whatever that might be as part of your kind of clinical career, I think.
That's awesome. It sounds like you've got a really nice sort of balance in the lots of clinical facing stuff, but different aspects to the role. Are there any downsides for you?
Yeah, I mean, there can be definitely stuff. I mean, the biggest one, like I did a list last week and there was a sebaceous cyst that kind of ruptured and that smell just stayed with me all day and stuff, to be honest. But that's a small thing and stuff. It probably got into my eyebrows or something, I don't know. And the other thing, I suppose, is that I always take ownership of the patients that I see, whether that's a good or a bad thing. So I may not have seen the patient before they come to my list and stuff, but I'll get the histology results. You know, I'll follow the patient up with the actual results as well to make sure they know that things are fine, or do any ongoing, you know, referrals that I might need to do. So there's a bit of hidden work that happens in the background, but not a lot. Also, you know, we do sometimes see things, and it can be a difficult conversation with patients where they may have seen a different doctor or a different clinician and then come for minor surgery, and you have to say to them, actually, it's not very appropriate for us to do the procedure today, whether because, you know, something's infected or something's in, you know, near the lip, for example. You know, certain areas I wouldn't touch because we're not plastic surgeons. But also, you know, we might get something that actually really should have been a two-week wait. And that's relatively rare, but we have to have that conversation with the patients and then also with the doctor that preferred to say, well, actually, this is what I did. So, yeah, a little bit of hidden work in the background. But, you know, these things are small compared to the benefits of doing the actual minor surgery.
And I'm sure there's some people now listening thinking, you know what, this really sounds like it might be up my street. What advice do you have for those people thinking, right, OK, I want to start on a journey towards minor surgery. What do I do next?
I would suggest if you're in a practice that already offers the minor surgery as a thing they do for patients, I would go and attend. Just go and attend, see what's happening, and get involved within the actual practice. If your practice doesn't do it, find out who does, maybe within the local PCN, and see if you can attend. And if you're really interested, then go on to do one of the courses and then start. To be honest, start. And that might be, you know, doing it with a supervisor initially and then maybe doing certain procedures on your own so that you build up your confidence and stuff with doing things. And yeah, just do it. Just do it. It's fine. You remember the things that we're doing, they're minimally invasive. We're not looking at massive things that we're doing. Patients should be able to walk out of the practice and stuff. You know, we're not putting in lots of stitches into people and stuff. We're using local anesthetic. So, you know, it's a really enjoyable thing. You know, patients really appreciate it. I think it's a good thing for the NHS, to be honest, because we're reducing waiting list times for certain things and stuff. And it's great. It's great fun. So get involved.
Great. I feel inspired. I shouldn't, because I've got terrible practical skills in surgery. But even I'm sitting here thinking, oh, maybe I should think about that. Where you mentioned some courses there, and we'll certainly include links to those. Where might people go for more information other than the courses? Is there any sort of CPD organisations related to minor ops in GP that people might want to network or go looking for?
The one that comes to mind most is the Association of Surgeons in Primary Care. So they've got, you know, a really great website. You can join them. They'll talk, you know, their actual site will go through events and courses that they might have, or different CPD, you know, looking on there. You know, they offer courses on things like vasectomy, and I think, you know, that might be the next step for me potentially. And stuff. So there is things out there for sure. If you're struggling to find a practice, To do, you know, to go and observe. YouTube is great. You know, see, look, you know, how do you do assist removal and stuff? They'll actually show you how to do it. And there are some really good like videos. They tend to be quite sensible videos about how to do things and stuff and different stitches and stuff like that. So that tends to be the main thing that I would kind of recommend. But, you know, most practices, you know, at least one practice in the PCN will do this. And I would suggest kind of attending really and getting involved.
Yeah, as I say, I feel inspired to think about it, certainly. We're asking people to end on their sort of highlight or best moment in their extended role. So any thoughts on that?
There's probably a couple of stuff. I mean, from a procedure point itself, you know, there's nothing quite so pleasurable as getting a cyst out hole or a lipoma out hole and stuff. But you know, I had a patient, you know, within the last year who was really happy with the procedure. You know, she had actually gone to a private clinic to have two moles removed, and it cost her like £1,000. And you know, she came to one of my colleagues and said she wanted some more removed, and you know, she was offered an appointment. She was seen within a couple of weeks. The procedure was done within half an hour. You know, she was chuffed. You know, I got a nice card afterwards and stuff. So getting that sort of feedback from patients is really nice, actually. And you know, it sort of makes it all kind of worthwhile and stuff.
Oh, great. What a nice note to end on, that the patients are appreciative and you really feel that it's sort of giving you that different scope in your role. So thank you so much for joining us today, Pim. As I say, I feel inspired, and I know that from experience there's a load of trainees that I have and colleagues in the past who've been interested in minor ops. And I think that's a really clear message you've given to others, to really go and look at who's already doing it in your area and get that relevant experience and observation opportunities. And then think about an accredited course and then get on with it, because it sounds like it's a great thing to do alongside general practice. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I had fun. Thank you so much.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.